All right, men, keep your heads down and your wits about you. There's something out there. It's hairy, it's tall, it's mean, and it's got fangs. Yeah, it's got fangs. Now, get your berets, get your helmets on, get your SR-80 ready, and let's rock and roll, yeah? Oi, Private Mullet.
Sarge, it's mullet, mate, all right? Mullet.
Don't tell me what I'm going to bloody well call you. I'll bling tell you what I want to tell you. All right, mullet.
Righto, Sarge. It's actually mullets, you know, like mullet.
Righto, mullets. Get out there and make sure you are on sentry duty tonight, because I tell you what, you're the first one they're going to eat.
What? What's going to eat us, Sarge? Come on, mate. There's nothing out here.
Lights. Camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, get up. Well, ta very much, folks. I'm here, Lethal Mullet, here at Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia. That's right. We're here to chat about one of the great movies from the UK, which really is a great one when it comes to military horror and horror. Just in general, it is an amazing movie. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, the Lethal Mullet, and of course here, the Lethal Mullet Podcast, brought to you by, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network, and of course, Fandom Podcast Network. You can obviously check out this show on both, and I hope you enjoy on whatever platform, preferably Spotify, folks, because they take care of us, they're fantastic, and we love them. We certainly love our Spotify, folks. It's great. It's a lot of fun. All right, so we're taking a break from our love of Van Damme and Jackie Chan, folks, to look at a great film. This is described as Predator with werewolves, and it is a British horror science fiction, military science fiction, if you like, film, which stars Sean Pertwee, Liam Cunningham, and, of course, Kevin McKidd, and a host of others. It is an amazing flick. This is one which really shows a crack team of commandos have been routed and taken out by a werewolf. That's right, folks, a werewolf. And in between all that, we've also got a team that are going in just doing basically a recce on a mission. This is one of those missions where they go out and they fire blanks at whatever they're going up against. Usually it's the SAS or thereabouts. And that's pretty much what happens with Sean Pertwee's squad, along with, of course, Kevin McKidd, his 2IC. The Sarge takes his men out for pretty much a, one of these army days where they go out and do their training. But all goes absolute bupkis as, of course, they find that not only are the Special Forces team completely taken out, they're taken out in such a way that it doesn't make sense. Looks like somebody's actually really taken out. So they ditch there, of course, blank firing weapons and, of course, take the Special Forces MP5s. That's right. Very important weapon for the 90s, folks, of course. We'll chat about that in the firearms segment, of course. MP5s are everywhere, folks, thanks to Die Hard and Predator. That's right. but, of course, what's happening, this one is then they have to literally basically do the Alamo in a Scottish house. And in between that, they find a Special Forces soldier, one that Kevin McKidd was actually trying out for many, many months before. And, of course, from there, it's the Alamo with werewolves around it. And, of course, it's a haunted house. And there's some great Easter eggs, folks, in this one, particularly with a lot for films that were going around at the time. This one came out in around 2002, just after The Matrix. So you can guess there's a few Matrix, different quotes and stuff like that in there. There's fun. There's also a lot about soccer and, of course, just the military in general. This is a great flick, mate. And I'll tell you what, mate, we are going to get into it. We're really going to enjoy getting into this film. So that's what's on the cards for today. Big thanks to all that have checked out the Jean-Claude Van Damme episodes that we've done. You guys asked for them, so we did them. And we're going to continue to do those over the next couple of months. We enjoyed doing them. They're fantastic. Even when I've got the other guys on here, so we've got Kevin, the Reitzel, the Raider Nerd, and of course, Kyle Wagner, Lee Fillingsness, and you name it. I've even just chatted to, of course, my co-host from Making Treks, Mark Newbold, for our upcoming episodes we're going to be doing. He's coming on here for the Christmas episode to do Die Hard. Why? Because that's a freaking Christmas movie, folks. If you don't think it's a Christmas movie, well, folks, I don't know what to tell you. Why are you following this podcast? If you don't think it's a Christmas movie, my goodness. Oh, it's set at Christmas, for crying out loud. It is a Christmas movie. It has a Christmas tree in it. It is a Christmas movie. They even have Christmas books now with Die Hard in it. That's right, folks. But anyway, all jokes aside, it is going to be a ripper of an episode because Mark likes his action movies. He really does, particularly Lethal Weapon, which we did earlier last year. And of course, now we're going to get into this one a little bit later on. More Jackie Chan on the way as well. We're going to be looking at some Jackie Chan classics. Armor of God is one we're going to be looking at. Also, Battle Creek Brawl, or others is known also as The Big Brawl, which is pretty much one of his first attempts to make it in the US. We did one a little while back called The Protector, which looks at one he did with Danny Aiello, and it's kind of a different take on his action style. Certainly a lot tougher. You get to see him actually take people out or kill them. It's not something you see Jackie Chan do, folks, all right? So it was definitely a different take for Jackie Chan at the time when he's trying to break into the US and international markets. And, of course, he didn't really do that proper with his style until Rumble in the Bronx, which is a classic. And he certainly sacrificed himself for his art when it comes to some of these big, big ones. Now, we've done a couple episodes on Jackie Chan, but we are going to really go headlong into Jackie's whole 9 yards of film. We're going to get right into it. Iron Monkey we covered recently. Also, Donnie Yen, of course, and Yu Rongong. That is an amazing flick. Sets up, of course, Once Upon a Time in China series, although it was filmed afterwards, folks. That's right. But, of course, we're going to get into the Wong Fei-Hung series proper after this, Once Upon a Time in China. We'll do an episode looking at all three, and, of course, the other films that were done in the series, 4, 5, and 6, which actually reunited Jet Li, and, of course, was directed by Sammo Hung, Once Upon a Time in China and America, which is kind of a Shanghai Noon-ish film in some ways. It's an interesting film, particularly at a time when, you know, Sammo would have been very busy getting martial law on the way over there in the States at the time. But alas, it's time to leave you and send you into where to find the communications side of the Lethal Mullet podcast, where you can find this show and many others like it and much, much more. G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You can also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis. And where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema. Hi, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's been real busy day, you know?
Right, I'm
like,
hey.
Yeah.
It's just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, having a nice, you know, cold beverage.
Here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
And enjoy your shell, folks, because this is one hell of a horror, thriller, sci-fi, whatever you want to call it, military film, men on a mission film. It's kind of like Predator, kind of like The Thing to a certain extent, kind of like werewolf movies, kind of like, it's a bit of everything, folks, but this is a very original film as well. This was released in Australia on the 20th of March 2003, directed by the amazing Neil Marshall, who did one of my favourite period piece films because it's so lean and tough, and has Michael Fassbender as, of course, Centurion. This is starring Sean Pertwee, one of my favourite British actors, Kevin McKidd, Emma Cleesby, and, of course, the always amazing Liam Cunningham. That's right. A lot of these are people you know from the films that, you know, are made over there in the UK, in TV series, Game of Thrones, you name it. Majority of these people have always been on TV or in films that you know well. Even US productions that go over there as well. It's a great cast, and it's, I mean, it came out in 2002. It's quite, what is it, 20 years old almost now, you know, but it still holds up. It's got great ratings on IMDb. It's 6.8 out of 10, 79% for Rotten Tomatoes, and 4.6 out of 5 for Amazon.com.au. So, out of the Google users, 92% love this film. This film delivers exactly what it says it does. Dog soldiers, you know, it's amazing. So, we're going to get into it, folks. So, the film itself got a very, very simple premise. The premise is this. A small squad of regular British soldiers is expected to meet a special ops unit and basically train alongside them and do an exercise. You know, those exercises that the army does to keep their skills honed and pretty much keep the teams together, working really, really hard on their technique. Like anything, it's practice, isn't it, right? But instead, when they meet where the special ops team's meant to be, they find an absolute massacre has taken place, but they find one sole survivor. Captain Ryan of the Special Forces, played by Liam Cunningham. Leading the troop is Sergeant Harry, Sean Pertwee's character, who's kind of like the mother hen of the team. You know, he is, without a doubt, leading this in extremely well. He really plays a down on the luck sergeant in such a way that it, you know, really works well. He's not, he's kind of like the guy that's been through everything, you know, that real mentor that you get in these army movies, these World War II movies and stuff like that. Alongside it, he's got obviously his partner in crime, Kevin McKidd, playing Private Cooper. And Kevin McKidd's great. I've always loved his work ever since I saw him in Trainspotting years ago as Tommy. Great actor, a real presence in film, great in Kingdom of Heaven. You know, he's got that great little scene at the start where they're sitting down to eat before they get on the ship. And of course, he goes, yeah, it's good. Talking about the food. Hey, Kevin, go for it. And I always thought Kevin should have been in the next Highlander, because I can tell you what, he's a Scotsman, does it proud, does it well. Just really, really good. So from here, the attackers turn out to be this group of werewolves. Yes, dog soldiers, literally, who are hunting down the team. So the team drop all of their weaponry that they've got there because it's all blank firing apparatus of these, you know, the bullpup rifles that the British Army carry, which we'll get into a little bit later. Because everyone I've talked to about those rifles says, yeah, they're pretty crap, mate. They're not very good, yeah? That's right, they drop those and they pick up Heckler & Koch MP5s and, of course, a G3 assault rifle and shotgun as well, folks. Can't forget that one because there's always a shotgun in a horror movie or a sci-fi movie. You've got to have a shotgun, a scatter gun, yes, to take out the bad guys. And from here, of course, we see it lead to where it does, which is a little house. And they're rescued on the way there by Megan, played by Emma Cleesby, who is a zoologist who's basically been studying whatever these guys are, these beasts. They go to a farmhouse where they try and make communications with their superiors, but from there, it turns into the Alamo, folks, where they're forced to close the doors and basically batter everything that comes at them with guns, knives, hot plates, spoons even. And of course, swords. There's everything. This is a great film. You know, it's not a massively budgeted film, but that's what I love about it, because it's about the characters and it's about the people, which we're going to talk about now. So let's talk about the cast, folks, because this is one hell of a cast. All right, Kevin McKidd, we've talked about. Kevin McKidd turns up in some of the greatest stuff I've watched over the years. One of his best is Bunraku. which no doubt I'm going to cover here, as a couple of listeners have actually reached out and asked me about. They said, hey, man, where are you going to do that that Bunraku, man? It's a great film. And you know what, folks? Yes, we're going to do it soon. No doubt. I'm going to try actually get a Blu-ray copy of it because I want to get even more detail out of that film. It's a film starring Woody Harrelson, Josh Hartnett, and, of course, Ron Perlman, Demi Moore. You name it, folks. They're all in it. And, of course, Kevin McKidd plays one of Ron Perlman's henchmen in it. It's great. It's also, at the start, the bad guy from Riddick. as in, you know, the last one, Riddick 3, who's pretty much the head of the Mercs. And he's got all the comedic lines. He's great in it. All right, so let's have a chat about some of the other characters in this. The names may not be as familiar, but I tell you what, they are fantastic in it, and I think they're really actually quite funny in some of the scenes. Sean Pertwee, son, of course, of Doctor Who, John Pertwee. Now, of course, we've talked about Sean a number of times on this show for, you know, the great work he's done on films like Soldier. We just chatted about him on Event Horizon. Obviously, he's worked on Batman products now, too, of course. We only have to look at some of the other stuff he's done. Obviously, Gotham series. He's done Blue Juice that he did. He also did, as we mentioned, Event Horizon, HAL, ID, Love, Honor, and Obey, Wilderness, The Pale Horse also. And, of course, you see him in that Matrix film that we love so much, Equilibrium. Remember that one, folks? Yes, Equilibrium. And yes, you have asked about that one to be on Lethal soon, and yes, I will cover it soon. Equilibrium's another one I have not been able to find the best print of. I found it on DVD a few times here and there, but it's certainly one of my faves. I'm a big fan of that film. When I was at graphics school, it was one that a friend of mine had asked me about. Did I like the work of Christian Bale? And it was about, what was it, 2003. So it was even before Batman Begins was even something of note. I don't even think they'd had the name Intimidation Game out yet when they were talking about that. But back as far as that, there was the film Equilibrium come out. And obviously everyone was very, very popular. The Matrix was very, very popular. Everyone loved it. And, of course, this was in the middle of when the two sequels were coming out. So I remember Empire Magazine had a bit of a run on talking about, hey, look, yes, you've had Matrix Reloaded, and guess what? The next one is coming out very, very soon, and this will have everything in it that you ever wanted. But while you're waiting for that, check out this film called Equilibrium, starring, of course, Christian Bale. And then I saw a couple actors that I knew, and, of course, one of them was Sean Pertwee. And then, of course, the other side of it was, of course, from Braveheart, some actors that I went, oh, wow, I know that one, too. And, of course, Sean Bean's in it, and guess what? Sean Bean dies. There you go. Is that a spoiler anymore? I mean, he literally just joins anything, and he dies. He goes, hi, I'm Sean Bean. How you doing, mate? You're all right. Boom, dead, done. You know, no, that's right. The Wachowskis actually let him live in, of course, Jupiter Ascending, which... Can we get some sequels, folks? That was great. I like that. born in June 4, 1964. An amazing, extensive career. Sean Carl Roland Pertwee. He's only 57 years old, folks. Well, I tell you, he's a very sprightly 57 because I think I look older than him sometimes. Sans mullet, folks. Obviously known for playing Sergeant Wells in this, Alfred Pennyworth in Gotham, and, of course, Captain Fitzpatrick in Tom Jones. He's an actor that's really, he's turned up in some amazing stuff over the years. Elementary, he was in, The Professionals, MasterChef, and Zero Hour. I mean, he's just one of the really interesting actors who's always charismatic. You know, he's similar to his dad in some ways, but also not at the same time. But very, very charismatic. Always has been, and is interesting no matter what. And I've always found him very, very interesting. You know, he's just one of those guys that's really, really... I mean, going back to 99, where he was Brutus in the TV movie Cleopatra, if I remember right. And then he did Doomsday as well. He did everything back then. It was just crazy. There's so many different roles that he played. He was in Devil's Playground, and he also did a lot of stuff on TV at the time as well. But I think the big one was obviously getting the role of playing Alfred Pennyworth in that show, Gotham. And, you know, I think the work that he did on that really settled, I think, for me, a bit more gritty version, but also tough, but also a discipline that we see, not in Michael Caine's performance, because he's, you know, too busy worrying about Fernie Brancas. That's right, Fernie Branca sitting by a scene, be away 7 days on holiday, leave Mr. Batman where he's, yeah. No. Alfred Pennyworth was always a Special Forces soldier, folks, or ex-British Secret Service, one of the two. That's how he was able to do what he did. So, you know, God, you gotta say, amazing. But I just look at some of the amazing Tale of the Mummy he was in as well, which was great. 51st State. What else was he in that was really big, particularly Renaissance, which was an interesting one. Now, that was a black and white animated science fiction film by Christian Volkmann. It was an English language one, but it was made in France. It's a French one. And it was interesting because it had sort of a feel of a Blade Runner-ish film noir sort of feel to it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was something that was interesting. In 2008, he played Nathan Rooker in Mutant Chronicles, which is a role-playing game which they basically did a live-action adaptation of, which I think is up against mutants and stuff like that, if I remember right. It's kind of a post-apocalyptic sort of thing. I really enjoyed it because of the cast that they had, but also just it was one of those not quite 100%, you know, big budget productions, and they just went all out anyway and made a hell of a thing. But in Ultramarines the movie, all to do with, of course, the Warhammer 40,000 universe, he played one of the lead in that as Brother Proteus. Now, anyone that knows that production, you know the names behind that one are even more fun. Of course, we've got in that Terrence Stamp, folks. Those names come all together, don't they? You know, it's crazy. Because, of course, General Zod himself is in it, along with, of course, John Hurt as well, and Donald Sumter is in it as well. It's a hell of a cast. It also had Steve Waddington as Brother Verinor. Also had Johnny Harris, Ben Bishop, Gary Martin, and Christopher Fenney. And that came out, I think it was about 2011, if I remember right, or 2010, somewhere around there. Again, interesting flick in itself, and one that, you know, if you're a 40,000 fan, Warhammer guy, you know, that the kind of the time period we're looking there, the late 2000s and 10s, 2010s, whatever you want to call it, it was a great time. It still is to this day. It's expensive one, though, folks. Now, you can literally have a pile of movies and, you know, couple of coins, throw the coins on top of the movies, and you know what? No doubt all those coins will show you movies by Liam Cunningham. You know, he's been in so many movies over the years and TV shows, and of course, he played a character on Game of Thrones. He's fantastic. Liam Cunningham is just one of those really versatile actors, and you know, he can play a tough character, can play a quirky character, he also can play some very funny roles as well. In this one, he's playing kind of a sneaky character, if you like. It's part of being Special Forces, isn't it? He was born in 1961. He's only 60 years old, folks. 60 years young in East Wall, Dublin, Ireland. There you go. From the old country, Ireland. And, you know, as an O'Brien, I can say, you know, good on him for coming from there. You know, it's most of... you know, what he's done has been outside of Ireland that I've known, though. You know, when you look at some of these movies he's done over the time, you know, it adds up. He's done quite a few. So, big ones in A Little Princess, Jude, Dog Soldiers, The Crooked Man, The Wind That Shakes the Barley, Hunger, The Escapist, Good Vibrations, Let Us Pray, and Childhood of a Leader. But he's done a lot. So, let's have a look at some of those things. He resides in Dublin with his wife, Colette, and he's got a family there as well. He's also somebody who's very heavily into doing TV roles as well as film. So, obviously, he moved into that with, of course, his work on Game of Thrones. And I do believe the character was Sir Davis Seaworth, if I remember right. Yes, Sir Davis Seaworth, the Onion King from Game of Thrones. Now, he's been in a lot of stuff. He was in The Musketeers. He was in Electric Dreams as General Olin. This is more of these done. He does a voice work on Rick and Morty as well, and he also was Man at Arms on Masters of the Universe Revelation, which you either love or you don't. As a fan of Masters of the Universe, I actually really enjoyed it. Yes, folks. Yes, there's even members of Fandom Podcast Network that didn't quite like it. Look, you either like it or you don't. But He-Man is not the only character in Masters of the Universe. I'll say that. And I certainly carried more in my collection of Masters of the Universe than just He-Man. So I quite enjoyed the number of different people that were involved in that one too. So that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it and certainly something that I'll go and enjoy more of. So let's have a look at what he's done. Obviously, after Dog Soldiers, he had done The League of Gentlemen's Apocalypse as director, actually. There you go. Isn't that interesting? He was also in Breakfast on Pluto, Hunger, the Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. He played Mad Dog McGuire. He's also in Harry Brown as Sid Rourke, Centurion as Brick. Yes. Now, this is, of course, another Neil Marshall movie. Of course, Neil has put him in quite a few of his movies. What's great about Liam's role in that is, of course, he gets the lines and the run of the mill when it comes to some of the great comedic scenes in that. One of those being, oh, your mother called you Brick. And his own words, he goes, yeah, she was a fucking comedian. Which I loved. It was great. It was in Clash of the Titans as Solon. Pitch Black Heist, which is a... short film. Interesting. I don't know if that's got anything to do with Riddick. I don't think so. The Silence of Joan, Warhorse he was in, so that's a pretty big production to be a part of. Also, 24 Hours to Live, The Vault, and to be announced, currently filming The Last Voyage of the Demeter as well. So interesting. Great actor, very charismatic, always playing, obviously, some leader roles, villains, henchmen. In this... he's playing a very mysterious one as, of course, Captain Richard Ryan. Now, in this film, we get to see him at the start as the head of the Special Ops Team's training department, which is training Kevin McKidd's character, Lawrence Cooper, who is an NCO at that stage, trying out and trying to get into the Special Ops Team. So I don't know if it's just SAS or whether it was meant to be British Special Forces in terms of the Royal Marines, whatever it is. And both of those are very, very tough to get into, folks. Just as tough as the US forces and Aussie forces as well. But what's great is we get to see straight away how cold, cunning, and how no matter what, this man is going to kill his enemy due to the mission straight away. No mucking around. Kevin McKidd and Liam are head-to-head in the film, and it's done quite well. Of course, Liam gets some great lines in it, and he also, not only is a comedic in it, there's sort of, you almost feel sorry for him at some stages until you find out who he really is. Of course, we'll talk about that spin in a sec. Darren Morfitt plays Private Phil Spoon with a spoon. Let's get straight to it. Yes, he is the butt of the jokes from The Matrix. When he carks it in the film, which he does in that Alamo scene, what happens straight up is they go, there is no spoon. There you go. Matrix one of those. We also have Chris Robson as Private Joe Kirkley. Leslie Simpson as Milburn. We have Thomas Lockyer as Corporal Bruce Campbell. Craig Conway is male camper and Tina Landini as the female camper. So it's not a massive cast, but what's great about it, we do have quite a bit of obviously some great work when it comes to the look of the werewolves, which got to say they're very lean, definitely looks not feline, but it certainly looks very much like they would be if they were based off dogs and stuff like that too. All right, let's go look at the production, folks. Going back to 1995, Neil Marshall had this idea to put this together. Kind of a definitely pitch that I would say he's probably used the Predator idea. Predator with werewolves. I mean, that's what it is. But a low-budget production, no matter what you see of it, it is a low-budget film. But it's done in such a way that it doesn't look low-budget. You know, a lot of werewolf movies or horror movies in general use, you know, shock value of using, you know, camera tricks and stuff like that to hide budgets and stuff like that. This film does that to a certain degree, but does it well, really well. So it's soldiers and werewolves film versus each other. And basically what they wanted to do is put this out there. This went back as far as the filmmakers trying to, they were introduced to a company by the name of the Victor Film Company, and a sales agent who basically then took them to see a producer by the name of Christopher Figg. And of course, it was then taken to a company called AFM, where they found David E. Allen, a producer, who was thinking about doing it. From here, obviously, production started, and we had this film, which really has only got so many sets. When you think about it, there's not a lot of sets on the film itself. There's the house, there's the locations out in the bush itself, or forest, as they say in the States. And, of course, this is basically the plan. They've got the helicopter comes down, drops them off, and out they go. The only other scene you have is in a tent. And, of course, the werewolf that comes up on the team that do that. There was a production designer by the name of Simon Bowles who basically created small models and stuff of that for Neil Marshall to basically get an idea of how these things are going to be planned out, which is a great idea. I mean, that sort of planning you don't get to see as much in this sort of film, but they really put it out there. Dog Soldiers itself was then put together, and the production was produced by Kismet Entertainment Group. And from there, we basically go into getting this film made, getting it out there, of course, folks. The casting directors are Jeremy Zimmerman and Andrea Clark, and they obviously put up to this great cast, folks. So, you know, it's not the biggest cast. Obviously, it's just a squad, the Special Forces commander, and, of course, you know, the zoologist who's studying the area. So it was a lot, which is interesting. And that's what I think's really good about it too. They really bring that to pass. There's quite a bit of digital visual effects that were done by a company called Image Effects, and also there was a the physical effects supervisor and stunt coordinator together was Harry Weisenhahn, and done an amazing job. And the stunts are really grounded. There's nothing too out of play when it comes to big payoff stunts and stuff like that. I think it's all really strong. And again, it's pretty much Zulu almost, actually, folks. More Zulu than Alamo, because against the hordes of werewolves just keep coming. So interesting. That's Rorts Drift. We need Michael Caine in there, don't we? Yeah. Righto, hold them off, guys. Grab yourselves your Henry Martinez and let's go. Let's go. Come on, folks. Let's do it. Of course, the States, it came out on Sci-Fi Pictures Telefilm, which is on the Sci-Fi Film Channel, which is interesting. But you got to think about, there's so many different references. Now, obviously, we talk about The Matrix, which I think is the biggest one, but Neil Marshall, such a pop culture nut, you know, I think putting this together, he loves this stuff. So there's, you know, stuff to Zulu, there's stuff with aliens, yeah. Short control, bash! You know, that's in there. Evil Dead, even a bit of H.G. Wells. But the one that caught me off guard was Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Which is interesting. So the drafts of everything go quite back. Obviously, he's had this anticipation of making this since 95, so... You know, when you think about it, 2002, to get this film probably in production, you know, it's a good 6-7 years. And it took time to get it right, get the right feel. And, of course, it's a grunts film, you know, as in the grunts, the soldiers themselves, gets to, you know, the men in the trenches. And that's what's so great about it. So the film itself was planned to go to the Isle of Man and go basically in that area. But the film was actually taken to Luxembourg and filmed there, basically so they could get in and around due to tax breaks, whatever it took to get it done. And I think that's what's interesting about it. It's interesting that they shot there instead. You know, it's, you know, much different location, different, you know, feel. I think that's what's, you know, interesting about it, because it does still look like it's in the Scottish Highlands, which I thought was really, really interesting. But, of course, the deals they got, it was great to do that too. And, of course, very cold area because snow was starting to creep in at the time too. But it paid off, folks, because this film is a success. People love it. I love it. I don't know any of my mates that don't like this film. This is one of those movies that really connects. 79% on some other reviews, 6.9 out of 10. I mean, the average is more than 70%, put it that way. And that's what's great about it. You know, it's got comedy, it's got action, it's got sci-fi, and I think that's what's great about it, you know. So why isn't there a sequel? Well, there was an idea for one, and they were going to basically do it in either Canada or Luxembourg again on a $5.5 million budget using Andy Armstrong, who I do believe might be related to Vic Armstrong, famous stunt coordinator, and obviously somebody that's been behind some big action movies, folks. It was going to be called Dog Soldiers Fresh Meat, and it was planned to come out after 2004, somewhere around there. And it was going to be a script. No casting had been put together, but an idea was that it was an American team who we find out were the real people that were going to go for the war games part against Sergeant Wells' team. And basically, in the first film, obviously, it's about a family of people who become those people. But this time it would be about American men who have been turned into, or American soldiers have been turned into those by the sound of it. So it's an interesting one. I like the idea. But again, you know, who knows? It's something that they could follow up maybe in another time. There's been so many other films like that since, set in whether it's current times or World War II or vice versa. We've even had Westerns like that as well. And I think that's part of what was going to really do. Now, if you listen to the commentary of this film, there's a part where Megan, who is obviously a zoologist in the film, she basically cuts a hand on a glass, a bit like a shard on the side. The idea was that, you know, she might not make it out of it, but at the same time, what happens is she's leaving a part of her blood there, part of a stain that would basically be open to, you know, basically leave the DNA of the werewolf family there for somebody to pick up and take. So they would have milked that to a certain extent, I'd say. And it's interesting. That's always been something that, for me, has, you know, been interesting where this could have gone, whether it's a trilogy or maybe TV series. I mean, horror is just one of those things. They can push those so far, and I think, why not, you know? Again, one of the greats and certainly interesting enough. So let's quickly again have a look at some of the locations. So different scenes sort of around the place. Forest scenes were in Luxembourg. There's scenes in Norway as well. And second unit was also in the Highlands of Scotland in Glen Affric as well. So again, interesting regions. Like in Centurion, he goes to some really far out places and locations that just look so cinematic. It's amazing. So, all right, we're going to dip into some trivia here, folks, because there's quite a bit. And, of course, most of that you're going to find on IMDb, folks. There's mountains of it. So we need to check it out. We need to see. And I've just rated it 10 out of 10, folks, because that's how I rate it. But on this channel, though, of course, we rate things out of 5, folks. We rate them out of 5 because it is, of course, the Joe Hallenbach scale. And it is a solid 5. Okay, so let's get into it. Have a look at these, some great ones. Neil Marshall used dancers for the werewolves instead of stuntmen, and basically to get that feel of an animal, you know, the grace, that sort of feel that, you know, kind of a little bit like what was done in Aliens, if you like, you know, which is interesting. I do believe they used something similar to that when James Cameron did that one too. Now, check this out. Some of the corpses hanging in the basement were actually created and used for Event Horizon. And, of course, Sean Pertwee was in both of those, folks. So check that out. Simon Pegg was offered a part in the film but turned it down after he was told he could make a film called Shaun of the Dead with Edgar Wright, which is interesting. There's little to no CGI in the film itself because the people making the film thought the CGI was being overused at times when they could still use practical effects by the sound of things as well too. There's a clock on the wall in some of the scenes, almost guaranteed continuity issues, so Neil Marshall smashed it to ensure the hands were always at the same spot. There you go. Problem fixed, eh? So, Sean Pertwee's character, Sergeant Harry G. Wells. Can you think what that might be in reference to? I wonder if you know that one. I'm not going to spell it out for you because it already has been. obviously, Zulu's referenced quite a bit. When Spoon's talking about Rourke's drift, and of course, there's a scene where the script actually was going to have the dog pull at the wounded soldier's intestines, which, you know, it looked like just sausages all put together, which they probably were. But Neil Marshall thought it was too much and just made it the bandage. But at the end of the day, everyone's watched the film, and even me, I'm tricked to see it, thinks that it's actually the actual thing itself, the actual intestines, which is great. Sean Pertwee went up to the director, Neil Marshall, and asked if he could get a few drinks before shooting the scene where he's Sergeant Wells gets drunk, bandaged up, and the director said, I don't know how many a few was, but it was way more authentic drunk acting than you're often going to get in movies, so he was fine with it. And it's a great scene. Obviously, gets bandaged up and then put on that bed, and it's the scene where Kevin McKidd basically gets asked, come on, mate, lay me out, smack me out. Does one punch, he goes, is that all you got? And then he actually really did punch him out with the next punch, which is hilarious. the badge they all wear on their shoulders is a wolf's head with a spear through it. Marshall designed it at points, so it's not that easy to spot, but, of course, it's a bit of a line, which is interesting. Director Neil Marshall says the new Blu-ray almost didn't happen as they struggled to failed to find the original film materials in all the usual places. Now, isn't that something interesting that happens with a lot of these older films, which are definitely one that you know, that you always want? There's a lot of VHS films, action films, folks, that I want to get on Blu-ray. And I'm going to say Jackie Chan's films are now, and definitely some of the Sammo Hung and Yuen Biu films are now, thanks to a company in the UK coming together on those too. So more news about that soon too, folks. Kevin McKidd cracked a rib in the first few days of shooting, but he did hit it from Neil Marshall for fear that he might be replaced. And decided the pain was too much at one stage, and the reel that the point, Jason Statham, who turned it down due to his commitments, may have come back at one stage too, if things hadn't lined up. And of course, part of that was that he was busy on the John Carpenter film Ghosts of Mars, which is interesting. Also, there's Evil Dead references, as we mentioned, homages to, of course, Zulu. Again, set in Scotland but filmed in Luxembourg. So we'll leave it there for the trivia. There's still more. There's a ton in there to go and check out. So go and check it out. Also, check out Neil Marshall's audio commentary, which is just mind-bogglingly amazing. The film's great. It's a 5 out of 5, folks. Go and check it out. And, of course, stay tuned for more Lethal Mullet, folks. We've got more coming. Go and check out, of course, on TeePublic, Lethal Mullet Network stuff in there too. You'll also find it on Phantom Podcast Network's TeePublic. We're all up there. But, of course, I tell you what, if you do, go and grab yourself a travel mug, coffee cup, shirt, hat, whatever it is, beanie. You can even catch even some laptop covers there too, folks. Put your computer in, of course. And you can even get a phone cover too. Folks, go and check it out. On, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien. We'll catch you next time here on The Lethal Mullet.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsus on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. Also, the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. hosted by Kevin the Radio Nerd Reitzel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Fandom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.